Now, from the kitchen to the garden, and in the USA, more people visit gardens than go to Disneyland and Disney World combined. That is a fact I have no doubt would have thrilled our resident botanist, Tim Entwistle. He caught up with the finder of this fact on a windy beach at Wollongong in New South Wales.
Hi there, I'm Richard Benfield. I'm Professor of Geography and Chair of the Department of Geography and a biogeographer at Central Connecticut State University, New Britain, Connecticut, in the United States.
Now, you've been described as the world expert on botanic gardens tourism, but there's a qualifier to that, isn't it?
Well, the great qualifier, and it comes from a very great authority and one that you have to always obey, which is my daughter, who's very strident and very insistent that if ever that is mentioned in public, I also have to mention I'm actually the only one, so I could very well be the worst.
Now, we're sitting on a beach which is relatively popular at the moment. It's not its peak summer, but a lot of people go to the beach here in Australia. We know people go shopping. We know they go to the pubs. Where do botanic gardens fit into all that?
From an international perspective, botanic gardens arguably are the number two destination that foreign visitors would like to see after national parks. And then there's only a certain number that immediately spring to mind, Kakadu, for example. And so botanic gardens and yours in Melbourne and Adelaide and Sydney and Perth are very strong performers in terms of numbers of people and importance of botanic gardens in the world of tourism.
Now, is that all people? Because one of the things we often struggle with in botanic gardens is we think it's an ageing community. We think people, they might come there when they're a kid, but then they come back when they're older. So are you finding all people, or are there particular groups that are harder to get there?
Yes, I think you're right, Tim. It's a myth. It's a myth. We have a large number of visitors. Most of the gardens that I've surveyed, and I'm certainly more knowledgeable of American gardens, but certainly Australian gardens, have a wide range of age groups, the so-called millennial generation of young people.
Now, let me stop you then. Tell me about the millennials. Now, you better define them and tell me a bit about them.
Well, the millennials are aged 18 to 34. They're essentially the baby boom product. And with a dying of baby boomers, the millennials now constitute the largest demographic cohort in places like Australia and America. And so as a consuming group, as a tourism group, as any kind of cohort you want to look at, they are very important.
And what do these millennials like to do? So what's their typical weekend for them?
Oh, as yet we don't know, and that's fair to say, but some of the things that they do is very interesting. They certainly stay home more than we anticipated they would. Many of them don't drive in my part of the world. In the United States, 28% of millennials don't have driver's license. They're not driving anymore, but they love entertainment. They're prepared to pay for it. They consume voraciously, but only certain kinds of things. And in our industry, in the botanic garden industry and the food industry, they are very picky and very, very targeted in terms of what they will and won't eat and what they do. So in terms of us in botanic gardens, not only do they represent a potential market, we're finding actually they are a very good market. They come to botanic gardens, and that's not a bad thing.
Now, why do they come to botanic gardens? One of the things we soul search for all the time in botanic gardens is, are they coming there for those lovely labels we put on the plants and the wonderful education, the wonderful interpretation we spend time on? Is that why the millennials that do come?
Well, before I tell you that, Tim, and answer that, let me tell you of a garden that I know of in New York that is the only garden where young Jewish males and young Jewish females can go without a chaperone to court, to form alliances. So there's one good reason why young people go to botanic gardens. They're not being watched out for what anything they might do in the botanic garden, which you as a botanic garden manager, I'm sure, would be appalled if some of the things that got on. But no, on a more generic or more general note, they come primarily, I think it's fair to say, for beauty. They come for social purposes, to be with the people they want to be with. But having said that, they're still quite receptive to some of the goals and objectives and missions of botanic gardens, namely conservation and preservation and learning about the plant world. And that's not a bad thing as well.
So if you look around at Australian gardens, I know you've visited quite a few over the years. What would you say that we do well, not just for the millennials, but for visitors generally, and perhaps things that we could improve on as well?
The flora right off the bat is really very interesting to people. I've seen flora that I just couldn't even believe as what it is. So what do you do well? You show off your native species, I think, very well, and I think that's really the answer to your question, whether it be Aridlands Botanic Gardens, whether it be your gardens in Melbourne, whether it be here in Wollongong and the Gold Coast Gardens. Really show off native plants to the visitor, and I presume, and I hope this is true, horticulturally you're doing a job for them as well. But no, you do that very, very well, and I think you display them very well, and I think that's a fair comment in terms of what I find in botanic gardens in Australia.
Now, and we also spend a lot of time these days in botanic gardens around the world talking about conservation. We talk about how our life depends on plants, how important they are, and there's subtle and not so subtle messages there. Mm-hmm. Do you think visitors get those messages when they come to gardens?
I think the jury is still out on that, Tim, quite honestly. I think we try very hard to give that message, and that's not a bad thing. I think there are other conservation messages that have a leg over on us, in the sense that a whale watching is watching a species which apparently is highly endangered. You may go to a zoo because it's full of endangered animals. I think we in the horticultural or the plant world don't have that sense of urgency, and some would say we're not that sexy as a drowning polar bear, heaven forbid. And so we're in many ways a little behind the eight ball in trying to get the attention of the conservation-minded populace. But having said that, I think we're dedicated to it. We're doing it. We have to be careful. We don't overdo it. I have to tell you, I was in New York Botanic Garden not so long ago, and a lady turned to her husband and said, "If they blame me for the disappearance of the rainforest one more time, I'm gonna scream." And while I think, you know, I think we've done a lot of that in botanic gardens, filling people with guilt.
I've also heard you talk about the fact that botanic gardens, and gardens more generally, use all the senses. And I think that's a fascinating point, that you go out into a garden, you touch, smell, whatever all those other senses are, you hear things. It seems to be a point of difference there.
Tim, I am really very intrigued with that whole area, and I'm glad you brought it up, because it actually is one of my research areas. And I'm off the bat, and I hope you don't get offended by this as a botanic garden manager, but a botanic garden is the only cultural, maybe physical art form where you can smell, touch, feel, taste, all of the here. You know, I mean, granted, I'm sure some of them are pulling the leaves off your mint to have a smell, but that's a marvelous thing. You cannot do that in art galleries. They won't let you help the art along with a few, you know, eyeglasses and a moustache on the painting. So we're very, very lucky in that regard. And now we're finding out from the people that go to gardens and do these tactile things, touching, just how important they are physiologically, psychologically, and in terms of social networks. I'll give you an example which I think is very, very interesting. I have data, and I'd be glad to share with anyone, that in Las Vegas casinos, gaming revenues go up 40% when you pump lavender smells into the casino. The enjoyment of the individual who's gaming, whether it be pulling a slot machine or playing poker, 42% is kind of significant. And the research is easy. Shut off the lavender in one room and your revenues go down 40%.
Thanks, Richard Benfield from Central Connecticut State University in the US on Wollongong Beach.
Head of the Royal Botanic Gardens Victoria, Tim Entwistle,